We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Joining me today is Peter Grandich from Peter Grandich & Company. Thanks for joining me today, Peter.
Tom, it really, truly is always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to speak with you too. And, you know, I'm looking forward to getting some of your thoughts, but maybe we should start by, you know, covering how far beyond the Fed's control is inflation and the soft landing that Powell has promised here at this point?
Way beyond. I mean, this is something that is across the board. Tom, I deal mainly in the U.S., what's left of my business career, with mainly business owners. And throughout 20 or 30 different industries that my clientele makes up, they're all talking about how not only costly have things increased, but how difficult it is to get those things. And there is no sign that that is going to change anytime soon. And quite frankly, raising interest rates, they don't really feel is going to impact that because of how and where those items are manufactured and coming from. So, for a Federal Reserve that first just said less than a year ago, don't worry about inflation. Then they went with transitory. And now it's don't worry, we'll have it back down in 6 to 12 months. I don't buy it at all. I personally don't have any hope that within 6 to 12 months, inflation could be anywhere near 2 or 3%.
So you don't think that the Fed has any real ability to actually rein in inflation by raising rates or running off the balance sheet?
Yeah, you know, in one way, if they stay that way, which I think is going to be a political challenge for them, I think, you know, there's a lot of people that suspect and in a sense are hoping that he kind of caves. But I think it is so intertwined into everything because of a perfect storm that came together. First of all, Tom, when we had the pandemic long before the Russia situation, it was only then that the average American realized how little we count on what we need to be made by us, that literally from all places around the world, many places that aren't friends or at least aren't the best of friends. And if they might have been best of friends, they're not great friends now. So that was the first thing we learned in the pandemic. And then no one thought about, well, you know, if you lock down, you stop making things. And when you stop making things, there's a domino effect. And you just can't turn it like a battleship. You know, a battleship takes a long time to turn around and all. And then you compound it with what happened in Russia. And then this Chinese decision, which is still questionable to think that they did this just to prevent COVID and not have some economic warfare involved in it. But all those things impacting us, there isn't really anything that the Fed does that can directly or indirectly impact that anytime soon. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Peter, we're facing rate hikes and a very hawkish looking Fed, at least. And this has demonstrated some real pressure on the equity markets this year, and especially over the last couple of weeks. So do you see a grinding lower as we have seen or more dramatic volatility coming instead?
Tom, I made a decision last year. It was the toughest one. I'm in my 38th year, and that was in the fall to completely liquidate anything related to general equities that wasn't involved with things like uranium and gold and a couple other metals that I was involved in. Mm-hmm. The same feeling was about bonds when the 10-year was approaching 1%. And one of the reasons is because I just felt that we were in the biggest bubble. I wasn't alone. I think most people concur now. There's still an element. I call it the don't worry, be happy crowd on Wall Street. Tom, you can toss a lot of these folks that work, and I only speak here to the U.S., but you could toss a lot of the people in the financial service business right now off the top of the Empire State Building, and all the way down, they'll all say the same thing. Hey, so far, so good. So it's very hard for them to imagine anything more than, it's a dip, we buy it. The average person that's licensed in the U.S. now has only been licensed since the last financial crisis. Only a small percentage even go back to before the millennium. So they've lived on a one-way street. And when you learn how to drive on a one-way street, I remember the first time, Tom, I literally do, getting to my first traffic circle. when I first learned how to drive, I panicked. And we've seen a little bit of that. And right now there's this view that, hey, you know, it could bounce, you know, and we're, as you and I talk, we're going through, you know, a little bit of a bear market rally. But if and when it doesn't bounce in a big way, or even just go sideways to slightly lower, there's something else that's going to kick in that a lot of people aren't talking about yet, Tom, but I think they will be. Almost 60% of the money now in the U.S. stock market's in passive funds, which simply means they're not being actively managed. And that worked great when the market was going up. But think about it. Years ago, when 90% of the public controlled the market, or 20 years ago, when active money management was most of the money, at least the manager then could pick and choose, well, I don't think this sector or this stock should be sold, and even though the market's downturning. They won't have that choice now. And if and when the passive group thinks, well, I think the stock market's had it, that selling is going to beget selling. As much as of a run-up it was, we'll have a snowball effect down. And I think that will occur if we take out the lows that were made recently by 5 or 10%. Then I think it's people are going to, you know, do what they normally do. They're going to panic out. And that's where I really think the problem is. So I still think the market can go a lot lower, whether it's in 1 month, Tom, or 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. I still think the market in general has anywhere from 20 to 30 to perhaps 40% lower before there can be any reasonable expectation that stocks now have come to a valuation that's worthy to be, you know, start investing in them again, at least in my book.
So, Peter, where do you, let's say, try and figure out where that 20 to 40% level is? Is that basically the pre-COVID levels that we need to get back to? Or where do you feel that that reasonable valuation level is for these companies?
So, Tom, everything goes from one extreme to another. Everything in life, doesn't matter what we're talking about, whatever, the markets are no different. And if I may, let me just take you back. You know, I go back to the early 1980s. When I entered the business, the Dow had traded between 700 and 1,000 for almost three decades. In fact, in the early 1980s, there was a magazine article that was famous, Business Week, front cover said, equities are dead. In fact, people, if you look back then, the average financial firm was predicting, you know, terrible times. It was interest rates had just been 20%. Inflation was double digit. And this guy came out of left field, a young newsletter writer out of Gainesville, Florida, named Robert Prechter Jr. And he put out a forecast of a Dow 3,700. It was impossible for people to accept and unappreciate. How could you say 3,700? We've been stuck between 700 and 1,000 for decades. Well, we all know what transpired. I think we're on the other side of that extreme now. Most people just can't conceive that the stock market can go a lot lower and maybe not go back up for a very, very long period of time. So I think that's the first thing to recognize. And then, you know, we already had a fairly bad bear market. If you look at the hot talked about stocks that you would turn on that certain network, which I call Tout TV, a year ago, many of those stocks are down minimum 30%, but some are down 60, 70, 80%. And Tom, I'm not talking about a dollar stock that fell to 10 stock. I'm talking about a stock that was pumped up to $100, now it's trading at 12 or 20. That's substantial losses. And what people forget, Tom, even if a stock only went from 10 to 5, you now need 100% gain just to get back to where it was. Mm-hmm. So there's already been, and as we speak, we just started to see what I would call the favorite, or back in the 70s, they were called the Nifty 50, but the Apples and all, which all seem like just couldn't miss stocks. Just think not too long ago how stocks like Netflix and Facebook were talked about, can't miss money, money in the bank type of stocks. Well, there's still a few left, Apple and all, they just started to get hit here before this bear market rally. That market was so oversold, it's not a surprise it's rallying. So with starting to see them tinker, when we do break these lows, I don't think there's a lot of support. I think the market can go much lower than the average person expects. And with, like I told you, with that lack of real experience and a lot of people stuck in passive funds with not really any chance of selecting them, maybe I'll hold this, but don't, you know, sell this one. I think there's still a lot of weakness to come in the stock market for the foreseeable future.
Peter, before we hit record here today, we were talking a little bit about some of these problems that are affecting you know, senior citizens, for example, that are living on a fixed wage. So when you combine this capital destruction with the destruction of purchasing power of inflation, who do you think that affects most?
Well, you hit it. Well, the first people that got hit is, if you remember about a year or so ago or at the height of the pandemic, we were seeing these 21, 22-year-old internet market gurus all over in certain types of media, you know, recommending stocks, cryptocurrencies, et cetera. And what was interesting, I said back then, and I got abused about it, but I said, you better be careful, because the only real difficulty these folks have ever had in their life was an algebra class just a few years ago in high school. And now we've seen a lot of those stocks blow up. Well, the next group that unfortunately seems to be set, if not already getting hit, and I know it because if you look behind me, I live in a 55 and over community, is the seniors, the people that have already stopped working, that don't have a chance to go out and make extra income to make up for the much higher costs that face them. And that's where the real difficulty is, because many of those people's retirements have used financial assets, stocks and bonds. So the combination of not just the inflation going higher and costs going up, but then the value of what they have saved or left or live off or going down is a 1-2 punch that greatly concerned. In fact, I'll tell you real quickly, Tom, just walked around this morning and ran into someone and they asked me about a particular stock. And I said, well, I think it can go, you know, lower. And they said, Pete, I don't care if it goes lower. I just don't want them to cut the dividend, because if they cut the dividend, then I have a problem. And I told them one of the first things you're going to see in corporate America if we have a strong recession is dividends being cut. So The senior community is a community that could face perhaps the biggest difficulty with everything that's happening in the markets and in the economy.
And as we're thinking about this idea of capital destruction, Peter, you and I mentioned as well before we hit record about the cryptocurrency market. So how do you see maybe that affecting the rest of the equity markets? Do you think that there is a threat to the general equities from the cryptocurrency bloodbath in some ways?
Well, Tom, a year or so ago, when I was asked by cryptocurrencies, I always knew I would face, when I answered, a slash of comments, whether it would be in the comment section, it would be in yours or other places. I don't suspect that now because of what's happened. As you know, when it was 65,000, I called Bitcoin the tulip mania of the 21st century, and I called them Bitcoin maniacs. And I said it was just insane that there's going to be such a shakeout and such a dramatic loss. And I spoke particularly about a particular person who was really the godfather of Bitcoin, you know, and all the things he was telling people to borrow money and sell everything they have and buy Bitcoin. But what you point out is very true. We've already had a very substantial loss in the last few weeks of money, that if it was just a typical bear market where they would have rolled over, some of that would have found its way into other assets. But it's been gone to money heaven. And it's gone, a lot of them. And I think there's more to come. And that is a big impact. In one hand, it's good if you own an investment like gold, because it used to be a competitor. And they were definitely taking money away from the gold market. But the bad news is they lost so fast, so much, that they're not even able to do the right thing and come back to gold. They don't have anything to go back to gold with. So it is a big negative. And if they continue to go sharply lower in a much speed, it's certainly not helpful, even though thankfully it will hopefully not prevent any new money from going into what really proved to be just a total speculative investment. Remember, the whole sale of this, especially Bitcoin, was it was the new money. It was the way the world was going to operate around. And all these things were predicted to happen, and those things happened, and what happened? It went down faster than Grant took Richmond. And so it does cause a backlash and another issue that compounds the overall picture. But at least hopefully now there'll be sanity going forward. There'll be a tremendous shakeout. There'll be, as I said from the beginning, a survival of companies. And, you know, a few years from now, cryptocurrencies or whatever comes out of it will be something viable. But it's never going to be. You know, I never thought I agree with Bernanke, but what he just said the other day about it not ever being what it was claimed to be. I have to agree with him on that part. Mm-hmm.
So conversely, when we think about, let's say, gold and silver, we haven't seen them slide nearly as much as the rest of the markets. Do you still think that these are the safe haven assets that they have always been touted to be?
So late last year, after I had built the biggest cash position, gold in the mid-1700s, I made the decision that that would be, at worst, a place that would hold its own and at best offer the best capital appreciation. So I put a lot of money into gold, physical gold, mining shares, and a couple of highly speculative things. So gold did what it was supposed to do, as you and I speak. Yes, it's given up the gains it made earlier, but it still protected what I had hoped it would protect. While if I would have stayed or gone into what most other people were talking about, there were losses. And I think the biggest complaint from people that own gold are people that own junior mining stocks or mining stocks in general, because gold did exactly what it was supposed to do. And remember this, Tom, especially here in the U.S., the financial service industry treats gold like kryptonite. We could go into any part of the United States, into any type of financial service firm, and I will bet every bottom dollar I have, Tom, that less than 2% of those financial advisors, either themselves or for their clientele, have been purchasing gold. Okay, they just have been weaned on. You don't want to own that. It goes against everything that this firm and what we think people should do, yada, yada, yada. So that's the first negative. And then it had, until recently, it had this thing come along that was taking a lot of the attention that it used to get years ago, the Bitcoins and cryptocurrencies and things of that nature. But when it's all said and done, it did what it has done for a couple thousand years. Now, in liquidity crisis, which we had in recent weeks, people sell their winners or the things that are liquid because they don't want to give up on the things that are losing, or they margined it worse and they have to meet those margin calls. And that's what gold has faced here. And so I believe as things settle and a more orderly retreat happens, and not everybody and their mother has to come up with a dollar because they're not getting killed in cryptocurrencies or bonds or something, that's when the gold market will start to work its way higher. I will tell you this. I've seen charts, and I don't know what you're able to do after we do an interview, but there is a chart. It's known as a cup and handle. It goes back 10 years in gold. It is the most bullish chart I've seen in 38 years. It is almost always, the percentage is somewhere between 80 or 90% when they're formed in the manner that gold has formed. Over the period that it has, the likelihood is the move is to the upside. So I have as much confidence now, if not even more, because I've seen its competition get beaten up, that gold, if we talk 6 or 12 months from now, and the good Lord has me here, we'll be talking about a higher gold price. How much higher, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I also, again, point out to you that when you go down that food chain in the junior mining sector, that industry has a lot more challenges now than it did 10 or 20 years ago when I worked in it. So you can't expect just because gold goes up, all boats are going to rise with it. But gold itself, I think, will be higher, not lower, if you and I speak again 6 or 12 months from now. Mm-hmm.
You know, the mining stocks have taken quite a hit along with the equity markets recently. Do you see this as a buying opportunity, or are you waiting still patiently on the sidelines at this point?
The higher you go up, the producers are in a unique situation that I've never seen. Even when I managed hedge funds that bought and sold mining shares, the old days, the mining companies, as soon as gold went up, they leveraged themselves, they got into debt, they bought deposits all over the world. Gold would decline, and then they would be caught in trouble, spend the next 5 to 7, 10 years cleaning up their balance sheet. Not only are they in the best fiscal shape, but they're actually producing just tremendous free cash flow, something that just wasn't existing before. So I would start by saying that in the upper tier, the top 10, 20% major producers, that's the first place to go, because they're going to mostly benefit and not be hurt as bad. The junior market has a lot of difficulties. There's a lot of compliance and other issues, the ability to market their wares, to be heard of. Exchange traded funds have hurt them because if you're not in one of those, people don't even know your name. So, but I do think, and I still believe that we have a couple of commodities, I don't want to say can't miss, but seem to have a much better chance to go higher than lower. The first is uranium. Mm-hmm. There's no question, you know, that I was a big uranium bull, and I couldn't get people to listen to me when Cameco was $8 or $9. But that has flipped 180 degrees. And as people realize more and more the energy issues and other issues that face the world, nuclear energy must, and I underline, Tom, must be part of solving the problem. So while I'm not saying you go out and buy a lot of uranium juniors because they may never ever find anything, and even if they do, it may take 10 years to get all the approvals. But uranium itself, and now you have ways of playing uranium directly. There are investment vehicles out there. Uranium, to me, could only work its way higher. So that's one market I would have a very high degree of confidence. A market that needed a correction, but I think has a tremendous fundamental argument long-term, is the copper market. You know, we were approaching near five. There was a lot of excitement because everything was going copper. There's going to be a tremendous need, even though I think all this electric vehicle stuff is not going to happen as fast and as much as people predicted. Because, Tom, they're already talking about now that we're going to have blackouts and brownouts because, as my friend likes to joke, some of the equipment that provides electricity was installed by Thomas Edison, trying to talk about how old stuff is. And now I think I saw a story run today, Tom, or the day before. They're talking about maybe $1 trillion or a couple trillion dollars are going to need to be spent just to bring the ability to deliver electricity up to date. Mm-hmm. So it's great to say everybody's going to have an electrical car and that's going to somehow make things better. But if they don't have the power to put in it, but copper is has a very, very strong fundamental argument. So I like things favor the copper. So it would be uranium, copper, and then gold. And of course, after gold, there's always silver. And it gets the silver bugs a little upset when I always say I always choose gold over silver. But gold is still considered by some, and importantly by central banks, as a monetary asset. And they don't look at it that way, silver. So I like to own gold before I own silver. Mm-hmm.
So, Peter, I'd like to go back to something you had kind of touched on there. How have we seen the mining industry change over the years? Are they the miners far more disciplined now than in previous cycles?
Oh, they're more disciplined because, Tom, I don't think they have any choice but to be. It's far more difficult, especially in the junior resource business, to get capital and to get exposure because you're perpetually always raising money as a junior. And so you're always trying to keep your stock up at its high price and all. And the challenges now from compliance, the way people look at stocks, you know, in the old days, you're looking at an old dinosaur. A guy like me had 200 or 300 clients. A junior company would come along, convince me they were worth owning, and boom, 200, 300 clients went into that stock. Mm-hmm. Those guys don't exist. Now they have to find those 200, 300 people on their own while all the other things they're competing with. So on the smaller scale of the junior market, plus whatever was made up of that market left a lot over the last few years. They went into, you know, marijuana stocks and they went into cryptocurrencies. And there's still a handful of people that write about it and they've been around a while, but it's very, very difficult in that end. The other thing that's changed dramatically, Tom, is you and I could have a globe now. We were together 20, 30 years ago, spin it, point, and not be afraid to go mining wherever we pointed. Now it's very challenging on a lot of different scales, economically, politically, terrorism, all that, to where there's very few places. I have shrunk my looking to North America. And I used to invest in projects all around the world. And West United States, you know, why do I want to risk going into a third world country or West Africa where there's terrorism and all when there's similar projects in Nevada and Arizona? So I think where you are now and where you're going to look is more critical than any other time. and the difficulties I told you before, the challenges that these companies have to raise money.
So, Peter, is that one of the, let's say, biggest considerations on your mind when you're looking at, you know, considering a miner to buy is just geographic location and the jurisdictional risk of where the project is?
That is equal to, but what always goes back to is management. You see, when you, if you're in retail, things are always changing. You have to be on the forefront. If you're in computer software, I mean, you can invent something. By the time you get it to market, somebody's invented something better. But mining is pretty well, you know, kind of the same way, you know, changes a little bit and all. So the key is management, you know, to have the forte and skills to raise money, to get the recognition and all. So management is always key. And now, because of what I just explained, as important is where their project located. There could be a phenomenal management team that I would have gone anywhere with. Now, if they said to me, well, we're going to this place or that place, I wish them well, but I'm not going to go with them. So, but management's first, and then where it is, I think, is a close second.
Peter, you also mentioned the uranium market, and I know you and I have spoken about it before. What catalyst do you see happening for us to need to see the bull market resume in the uranium sector?
Well, I just think, Tom, if I may say it, and I'm not on Twitter anymore. I got off all those
things. I did notice that.
And the reason is I think people are expecting too much too fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some good people there. In fact, I came back. I was never really in uranium when I even worked in the metals business. But a couple of years ago, I heard a guy speak. I didn't realize how low it was. It was $20 and Cameco was $8. And so it was the internet and looking at social media that got me involved. But people are expecting too much, and there's a lot of people, like it should all happen in a week. I think what they have to understand is 2-3 years ago, it was politically incorrect, if you were a politician, to beat your chest about nuclear energy. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. In fact, you would have had most politicians in the United States privately at least bet you, nah, we'll never see another nuclear plant here again. You have to understand that's flipped 180 degrees. That has changed dramatically. It's the only way you're going to be able to move forward if you want to provide all these things to mankind. Nuclear energy is going to have to be a significant part of how we provide energy to the world over the next 10, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about the eventual price going up, particularly since we know that there's very few places where known deposits are. And a couple of places, who knows if we're even going to be able to get the uranium from there. You know, statistically, I invested in a play here in the U.S. And, you know, they brought to my attention that how much we use here in uranium to get our nuclear plants going, and none of it comes from the U.S. And even if tomorrow we started looking for it, there's only one place in Utah that currently can develop and enrich and do what that has to be done. So we don't need, so there's a tremendous push going to be, and money's going to flow into it. Now, it's just not going to happen all by Thursday. That's what I think the mistake of the uranium bulls are. But a company like Cameco that saw this, held back, and felt that they're not going to produce some of their great assets and sell it to break even when in a few years they'd be able to sell it for 3 or 4 times what it was currently valued at. A company like that, I know you don't like to, but how one doesn't own a Cameco if you believe in uranium. Mm-hmm. And the world is going to be their oyster. I mean, they're going to, companies like that, because are you really going to depend, no matter whether there's peace anytime soon with Russia? Are we anytime soon going to feel comfortable counting on anything coming out of Russia? Even if there is peace, even in Ukraine, from which we didn't talk about food, how much land and people's livelihoods and ways of living was destroyed. We can't expect them to be back on the farm in a week and, you know, sending stuff. So I think the uranium market really can only go higher. And if you're patient and if you remember, long term is past a week. You know, Tom, when I started in the business, every research report had a 3 to 5 year projection. If you mention something to somebody 3 or 5 years, they look at you 3 to 5 years. I'm not waiting 3 to 5 years, but that's really what we need to give things. And I think if you can do that, I think uranium itself particularly can only work to go higher.
And you know, as we think about exactly what you're saying, Peter, about a more sustained, longer lasting bull market, that's probably better for the industry as a whole, right?
Absolutely. Let's remember, it's a very small industry. You know, you can count your hands on the producers. It was one of the reasons, I've gotten very involved with, I think, is the shrewdest, most astute investor I ever met. I think you might have even interviewed him in the past, Michael Gentile. And he was not going to be involved in uranium, but he then saw an opportunity. And, you know, this is an industry that really in the last several years survived on fumes. You know, there was an occasional junior and they would talk about an area here or there and all. But it's certainly not an industry where there are a lot of players. And it's not a thing that you can suddenly become a big player overnight in either. So that's why I said it's going to be the governments that are pushing that it's going to really move forward more uranium exploration and development. And we haven't even seen that yet, but I think we saw the first sign. To me, I have to go say it again, Tom, Cameco management second to none in that business. And they just started now to push the button on, you know, they increased their position in one place. I suspect in the next 12 months, we're going to learn that they've made some other acquisitions. So like I said, it's slow and steady is probably the more likelihood, but it's going to be far more sustainable. And I think, like I said, if you can look out the next few years, it's very difficult for me to see how uranium doesn't make money. Mm-hmm.
So considering your focus, Peter, on nuclear energy, let's say, or uranium as an energy source, do you spend any time focused on any oil and gas energy plays?
The oil and gas business from the exploration side was always challenging. The majors always end up being the ones who, you know, make the big, big, big discoveries, even though there was always somebody saying that they could. The difficulty we have is, you know, we had a new president in the United States who somehow think that you could just go like this and say goodbye to oil and not worry about it, and suddenly now faces, listen, 60% of Americans, Tom, live paycheck to paycheck. A year and a half ago, gas was $2.50. Now it's $5. Now, a guy making hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, you know, doesn't like to see that, but it's not really changing his or her day-to-day life. But for 60% of the people, it's the difference possibly of even able to go to work. So the first thing we're seeing now is what those people who can't afford it because they simply don't make enough, they're using credit cards to pay for it, hoping that, you know, 3 to 6 months from now, it's not at that price. Unfortunately, I think it's not going to be the case. And therefore, that opens up no issue. But we've already seen phenomenal gains there. There's nothing cheap to buy. There's nothing undervalued there. I use this holy grail thing of investment sentiment from when it goes from despondency all the way up to euphoria. And I like to buy only in despondency, capitulation area. Mm-hmm. Oil and gas, I'll be long dead before that ever gets back to that area again. And so while I think they're going to stay high and cause a lot of economic and political and social issues, I don't see myself being able to find anything that's extraordinarily undervalued in that sector. Mm-hmm.
So to contrast that, you do feel that there are sectors of the gold and silver mining arena that are in that despondency state still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, again, I know you don't like to mention, but my single biggest, largest holding is in an the single best company I've ever seen. And it came off about 20% because it's a copper gold play and copper and gold came down. And the amount of people that were whining and crying just in my own household. So, yeah, I think people have forced a lot of those companies with more than just Moose Passage into that despondency area that I like to look at and accumulate in. Now, we know that those areas eventually turn. The question always is, how long does it take? And because, as I noted earlier, people's ability to look out is much shorter term. They're beating up these things to a level where they've tossed the baby out with the bathwater. So if you said to me, is there a sector or just a general sector that if I tossed a dart, it'd be difficult to lose in? Mm-hmm. We've gotten to that now in the junior market. But anything that's got some money, it's not out of money, it's advanced, it's already starting to identify a resource, yet it's down 70-80% from its high. Those are the type of things that I would be looking at right now.
Excellent, Peter. I think that's a great way to kind of conceptualize the junior space as a whole right now. Peter, is there anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap up the conversation for today?
Yeah, I think the other topic we didn't touch on, Tom, but I think it's going to play an important role. Here in the United States, I don't think America has been more divided than possibly the Civil War, before we went into the Civil War. And it seems to be getting worse. There is no middle ground. The left has become very hardened way over here. And the right is, what was in the right might have been middle right, is moving more to the right because they don't like what the left is doing. But we have somebody that's sitting in the presidency now who I think has health issues. And I'm not here to discuss what happened in the past election. I'm not looking to get the last guy in or whatever. But I think there's a serious issue. So I find it very hard to imagine, from what I can see, and I'm not a medical doctor, how that man can go 3 more years. And why that causes such an issue for me is the person who would replace him is totally incapable of being the president of the United States. And it's not because she's a woman or the color of her skin. So I don't think yet the political ramification of who is president and who is vice president has impacted markets yet, not to any level which they can be. And I'm afraid that that's going to be a topic that's going to compound all the other issues that we know might have discussed a little, didn't discuss. And that's why I still think it's better to be a live chicken than a dead duck, Tom. I use a chicken in a foxhole to describe where I went last year, and I don't see myself coming out of there anytime soon.
Well, Peter, that definitely adds another layer of complexity to an already kind of bleak situation for the U.S. at this point, right?
Yeah, it's bleak. And, you know, there's a poor investment strategy that people are taking now. It's called hope. They're hoping it does this. I hope I get my money back. But hope's a wonderful spiritual strategy. And for me, at least, I don't lose sight of my spirituality. It's more important to me than whatever happens in markets. So as negative as I may sound and how concerned I am of the future, I also keep faith in that there's a great creator of the universe, and somehow he or she, or what everybody wants to think it may or may not be, knows what's going on and has a plan. And I'm going to keep faith that in that person. And for me, you know, in my Catholic Christian faith, is the strongest thing. And that's what gets me through the day, not what my stock may or may not be doing.
Well, it's good to be able to take that type of perspective as well, and not, you know, just stare at the markets all day. Peter, of course, you mentioned that you are now off of Twitter, but you're still available at petergrandich.com, right?
Right. There's a blog that people can sign up for it. I want to point out to them, it's not an investment advisory service. I not only once had turned the Ten Commandments to the 10 suggestions, I managed to make and lose millions, not once, but twice, Tom. So if somebody's looking for an investment advisory service, we're not it. However, after almost 40 years, a few things I picked up that I think can offer, you know, value to people if they like to read our blogs. They can read my book. They can read all our reports online. They don't have to buy anything. They don't have to pay for anything. Even to read this stuff, they don't even have to provide an email.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right, Peter, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. And keep up the great work. It's one of the few services that I look forward to. And I really enjoy how you put together your interviews, the way you break them down, and almost all the people I've learned something from. So hopefully I've been able to do the same thing for your viewers today.
Well, I hope so too. And I'm sure that our viewers will get a lot of good value out of this. Peter, thanks so much.
Thank you. Peace be with you, Tom.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.